If you're looking to experience more pleasure in your life and a deeper level of connection with yourself and or your intimate partners in 2023, let's work together. Hello, I'm Stacey O, maitre d' of Finger Food Podcast and Holistic Sexuality Coach. You can apply to work with me by visiting my website, www.stacyogorman.com, or by clicking the link on this podcast bio.
Welcome to Finger Food. I'm your maitre d', Stacey O, and I'm here to serve you intimate conversations around sexuality and pleasure. On the menu is a selection of heart-to-hearts with people who vulnerably share their stories, insights, and perspectives. This podcast is about sex and so much more. We explore connection, letting go of judgment, and accepting ourselves exactly as we are. Let's dine.
In this intimate conversation, I chat to JC Tanuvasa. JC is a multifaceted artist known for pioneering the Aotearoa ballroom scene. She was born and raised in South Auckland and has become a mother of the International House of Aman. Her artistry and activism as Mother of Aman has been a force, creating safe and sensitive spaces in Aotearoa New Zealand and spreading awareness for queer POC and marginalised communities. In this intimate conversation, JC talks about having autonomy over her identity, pansexuality, what voguing and ballroom actually is, hormone replacement therapy, survival sex work, fetishization, beauty standards, and so much more. She is a wealth of knowledge, and it was such an honor to have her on the show. It's great to have you here at the table. Let's get started.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. JD Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For JD Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Welcome, JC. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Let's just get straight into it. So first and foremost, where are you from and what's your family background?
So Tala Falava. My name is JC Tanuvasa. I am 28 years young. I'm born and raised in Tamaki Makaurau, Aotearoa. I have a beautiful family of eight, and I'm currently living in South Auckland. I say currently because maybe I won't be living in there by the time this airs, but yeah, born and raised in beautiful South Auckland.
Amazing. Beautiful. And what are your pronouns and what do they mean to you?
So my pronouns are she and her, and they mean to me a great deal of sovereignty over my identity. Yeah.
Amazing. Can you elaborate on that?
I think being able to choose in a world that's so pressuring and kind of has the layout of how you should be from the day you were born. Mm. So I think to be able to have autonomy over my identity is a brave thing as a trans woman to do. And so for me to out loudly say my pronouns are she and her is having autonomy and sovereignty over who I am, outside of the male gaze and outside of westernization and colonization.
Amazing. And what is your sexual orientation in this moment? And what does that mean to you?
My sexual orientation, girl, has done some transitions just like my identity, girl. So currently I identify as pansexual. I have yet to be with cis woman physically, but I have beautiful relationships platonically. And I feel like that's enough for me to identify as pansexual. But I have crossed paths with trans men and cis men and queer men. And so I am in the journey of leading up to the ladder of being super diverse in who I share my body with and my mind.
That's so amazing. And you're the New Zealand voguing ballroom pioneer and mother. I watched the Vice doco on the voguing community here in Auckland, which you feature in. And I've been to a couple of the balls here in New Zealand as a spectator. And I'm just completely in awe of the work that you do. And it's just fucking amazing. Can you tell me a little bit about Faf Swag and voguing and the House of Amman, which is your house? And yeah, the origins and all of it.
Yeah, so if I go deep, we'll be here forever. But I'll touch on it in terms of highlights. So in early, like I would say like maybe 2009 is when I kind of discovered ballroom. And so I found it through America's Best Dance Crew, which is a competition going on in America. And then they had Vogue Evolution, which is a Vogue dance group. And so for the first time I saw a trans woman on television in terms of movement that I felt reflected by. And so quickly I was drawn by the movements and the unapologetic femininity, but in a sense where it felt very urban and relatable to South Auckland. And then as myself and girls of my generation were learning about Vogue Femme and discovering it in different pathways, and my one was television, America's Best Dance Crew. In the high schools, everyone was like voguing on rugby school fields on their lunchtime. And then, and different stories for different communities. And then, so schools like Calston Boys High, De La Salle College, and like St. Peter's, Auckland Boys, had a bunch of queer femmes like living their best lives on school rugby fields. And like intermission performances when special guests come and be like, who wants a dance battle? And all the voguers would get up.
Oh my God, amazing.
And we probably only knew like three elements at the time in our performance. And then in terms of New Zealand mainstream Vogue dance crew, who has like trans women like Aroko Atsuhura and Amanaki Prescott Faletau, also known as Hope, and they navigated kind of like street dance industry here, as well as like Māori television and Tangata Pacifica at the time. And so 2009 for me was the era that all of us sparked the interest in Vogue and Vogue Femme. And then Faf Swag came along around, I would say 2012. And they were like, okay, to other mothers, mistress, also known as Moi Langa, and Valencia Filippo, also known as Mother Aito, asked them like, okay, where we put on community events, what do you think the girls want? Oh, they want a Vogue ball. And so not necessarily knowing exactly what they were doing, but knowing that this is a need, and like first trial is, you get a first trial from what a first trial looks like. And so it was a great time. I didn't go because I was on my last year of studying. And so, oh yes, yeah, so it was 2013. And then 2014 is when I competed. And then that's when I immersed myself in the culture, because I had been someone that had studied it since 2009. Mm. And so I jumped in and tagged along with Fastwag, not only as a collaborative artist, but as a kind of like someone that knows ballroom and how a ball would kind of go throughout a night and mm-hmm. what categories looks like and educating. And it was myself and Darren Sanyue, which is also known as, who is also known as Envy Iman. And then since then, alongside other pioneers, we just grew the culture. And now it's, everyone wants a ball.
Yeah.
And the pioneers are like, we are tired. We are tired, but it's beautiful to create safe spaces for us to live our best lives and feel our fantasies and love up on our bodies and all parts of our transition and find refuge in chosen families. And then, and also highlighting what's missing outside of our community. So in terms of communities across the board, we're thinking about creating safe spaces. Ballroom is a great example, and it's like tripled effect, like kind of domino effect to other spaces, like, okay, look what they're doing. Like, and so I would like to say that ballroom, I'm not only a pioneer of ballroom, but ballroom is a pioneer of safe POC queer spaces and then safe spaces in general in Aotearoa.
Okay, so just to clarify, voguing originated in, is it originated in the US, like the actual voguing culture, and voguing specifically is like a form of street dance specifically for queer and trans
individuals? So in like early 70s, and it can even go further back, I'm not too sure, but like early 70s is the one that everyone references back to. There was like a disruption in pageant culture. The community came up with categories such as runway, fashion, and then came up with Vogue Femme. And I mean, it started with old way, then went new way, and then Vogue Femme. So the style that you see today is developed. So the style that everyone's dancing now, which is Vogue Femme, was birthed by trans women. And so old way is kind of what you would see on Madonna's video clip, very poses and shapes and structures. And then trans women came into the movement and made it more fluid and elegant and feminine. And so then it not only transitioned in movement, it transitioned in the sound as well. And so today, what you'd be seeing is a lot of Vogue Femme that was birthed by Black and Latina trans women.
And and what's the, so the different houses, do they compete against each other? Like, what, how does that work?
Yeah, girl, it is a competition within a competition within a competition, girl. So we try to remember our roots, which is ballroom is one entire family. And then in this big family, you have your, what outsiders will say is like your dance group or your clique. But in ballroom context, it's our chosen families. So who nurtures you, and not only just in ballroom, but inside your real life, because not many queers don't have that next level of nurturing or no nurturing at all from their blood relatives. And so they find refuge in chosen families. And I think chosen families is the idea of a best friend. There's no such thing as a best friend. There's a friend. A best friend more so is like a sister or a brother. And so that's what we've taken on, but as creating a group that we consider family. But in my, sitting in my chair today, and what I've learned in my many years of being a house mother, like even without the house names, so you have, in New Zealand we have, shout out to House of Aitu, House of Coven, House of Delamore, Givenchy, Dawn, and the Wellington Ballroom community, and so many if I've missed any. But I've really learned that it's the connection between the family that it's important, that's most important, rather than representing the house name.
Okay.
Because we get lost in competition.
Yeah.
And so, and you have to be okay with when children want to leave the house, but it doesn't necessarily mean they leave you and don't have a relationship with you.
Mm.
And so I had to learn that the hard way, because I'd be like, you left, you know, me and da da da, all these things. But I've learned to detach the importance of carrying the house name as a group, and more, and what's more important is the relationships between each other. Because our namesake can come and be like, I don't want you guys to have my house name. And I'm like, okay, the house name's gone. Are we still a family?
Yeah.
And I think that's what's most important.
Wow. Yeah. That's fucking beautiful. And also, do individuals leave the house and go to another house? Like, does that happen?
Yes. So it can be cute and like transparent and like, go spread your wings, because like sometimes like a house can only offer you so much, and you, let's say you've graduated. And so like if another house is offering you something that sparks you, that's pushing you, and you have that transparent conversation with the house parents, it can be a beautiful transition and like set you free, like go do your thing. Like that's totally beautiful. Wow. But then the reality is it can be very messy.
Mm.
I'm not happy here, or I don't like this person in this house, or I'm not a fan of your mother at this moment. Bye.
Mm.
And so that does happen as well. But that's why I'm trying my best to not take the house name so serious.
Yeah.
Because I think the relationship is more important.
Mm.
And yeah, so that it can get really messy.
Mm.
But from when I lost my first child last year, or kind of like in the beginning of this year, I lost my first child this year.
Mm.
And like I cried like a baby.
Aww.
Yeah, it was a big deal. Mm. But I learned very quickly, because I met a legend from American ballroom scene in Australia when I did some workshops there. Mm. And she gave me like the best advice. And she was just like, you're taking it too seriously. And she was just like, ballroom is our home where we get our energy, our love, get some ideas, be creative with each other. But it's, you're meant to leave the nest and go conquer things in your personal life and in the world. And it's so easier to help others than yourself if you're not in love with yourself.
Mm.
And so I quickly listened to that and I was like, you're right. Let me go and sort out myself. And then me looking after myself enables others to think about how they fill their own cup.
Mm. That's so beautiful. How does one become a mother?
Well, it depends. It's literally like, there's no really specific framework. Sometimes people want to become mothers because they're like, I'm ready to take up that responsibility. I'm ready to look after people. I'm ready to show them something new to the scene. And sometimes like people are very ambitious and they choose to do it at such a young age. And we're like, go off, do your thing. But it is not an easy job, especially if you're serious about it. You know, anyone serious about the idea of being a mother, motherhood, they will quickly learn that it can be very overwhelming.
Hmm.
And so what I've learned was sometimes the family deems you. And I think that's the most beautiful way to be asked to be a mother, is when a whole group of people are looking at you and like, we want you to be our mother. And so I know that that's what happened with Valencia Aitu. So at first it was like Faswag. And then they needed to switch the collector from a ballroom house. And so when they made that transition, they were looking for the house parents. And all of them voted Glency to be the mother.
Mm.
And I thought that was pretty beautiful to be looked at as someone maternal.
Mm.
Yeah.
So when you came over last week, you mentioned you were going back on the hormones and that it's been a real journey for you. Do you feel comfortable talking about your journey with hormone replacement therapy?
Yeah, I think I'm definitely comfortable. I think it's a conversation that I haven't dived into in a while, especially knowing that being surrounded by so many young trans women that are just blossoming into their identity. So I'm happy to talk about it. Yeah, girl, so she's going back on her hormones. She's looking a bit masculine, which I think is fine. But just for my journey, it's me settling. It's me kind of not taking care of myself. So what I'd like to say is I'm so in love with who I am. I'm just not in love with how I am. And I think when you think about insecurities and dysphoria, it gets to a point where you have to like, I forgot her name, but this trans woman said it really beautifully. She was just like, insecurities is like, can be like flatmates. You necessarily don't want to live with them, but like you just deal with it because you gotta live, you gotta move on, you gotta be around these things for you to survive. And so for me, I've looked at my dysphoria and and my insecurities as things that I just have to be content with because it's who I am today. But I think in my many years of serving my love languages, which is acts of service, I've made the most disservice to myself in the sense of not taking care of myself. But it's just so hard when it's your heart is always up for others instead of yourself. But again, with the thing that I learned this year from Asia West, from the ballroom scene, is that like it's easier to look after others when you're not in love with yourself. It's easier to love up on others. And so for me, jumping back on my hormones is me taking my transition seriously. I think I got a bit tired of effort and pushing my best foot forward because of accessibility in New Zealand for trans women to thrive in their transitions almost comes to like a standstill. And I grew up around many older trans girls saying, I'm going to be doing all these things by the age of 25. And some of them are like 30 plus and haven't got anything done. And so it's kind of like a thing that I grew up knowing in the sense of like, it's not going to happen. And so I got to a certain point in my transition where I just like kind of gave up. But now that social media and things are being a bit more accessible, I'm looking around like everyone's getting things done and I'm like, okay, it's possible. And then I'm looking at some of my relationships with my friends and my family, chosen family. They're affirming me like, girl, sort it out. Do the things, girl. Like, you're not a girl with a beard, girl. That is not your vibe. And like, yeah, I know. It's like, so go to your laser, go do your hormones. And I'm like, yeah, I know. But it was hard for me to kind of choose myself. But I am now, slowly but surely. And so my goal is to be fully fab in the year 2024 and walk a beauty category at the ball. Because I only Vogue and do runway. But beauty categories, it's a different standard. It's a different like showing off of how much work you've done for yourself. And a lot of girls had to go through some dark areas in their life to achieve that. And so I would like to be one of those girls.
Yes, to that goal. I love that. And excuse my ignorance, but when you go through the hormone therapy and then off it and then on, like how many times have you gone on and off it in your journey?
So I'm 28 now, and the last time I was on it properly was at the age of 21. And so, and then in certain points of my life, I would jump back on it just to stop my acne. And then, because like when you jump off, both your testosterone blockers and hormones, you can kind of have like a flush of like oily skin and body hair and acne. And it's just like basically feeling like you're going through puberty again. Or sometimes when girls go through their menstrual cycle and they're like going through it, it's kind of giving that.
Okay, wow.
And so, so when I had jumped off, like I fully... I could see the physical change, but my mental change was what I enjoyed. It does make the hormones can make you emotional, but the number one advice that I was told before I jumped on it is take control over the hormones, not the hormones take control of you, because it can be emotionally overwhelming because you can feel fatigued, yeah, lots of tiredness, very much in the feels, and you kind of lose your sex drive, especially when the testosterone's not pumping. And so, yeah, you lose your sex drive, and then you gain a lot of weight. And so,
whoa,
my brain could not handle that in the air, especially in my years of studying. So, like, here's me trying to study and then trying to navigate my transition, and then, you know, a little bit blindsided about boys, you know, in that era, dating, wanted a boyfriend, all of these things. They mentally couldn't handle it. And so I made the courageous decision to stop, not only because I was a little bit lazy, but but because I couldn't handle the emotional turmoils. Like, I would be writing novels on Facebook and poetry on Facebook.
Yeah.
And people would be like, is she all right? It's like, she's all right. She's just an extrovert.
Yes.
Yeah. But I do believe that you can overcome them. You just have to be in the right mentality. Like, hormones is a very beautiful thing that offers girls so much positive things. It's just like it's no joke. Like, you have to be really prepared for it But a lot of girls that want to get to the end of their transition, which usually is like physical change in terms of surgery.
Okay.
They put themselves in like this brainstorm of like, okay, what's the quickest way to get there, or how can I get there? And often like a 9-to-5 doesn't cut it. And then sometimes a 9-to-5 is difficult for a trans woman to sustain because of who they are and how they look. Mm. And so a lot of trans girls jump into, not a lot, but in my world, I know many trans girls that have jumped into survival sex work as a form of means to support them in their transition.
Wow.
And so when you're in survival sex work, you have so many types of people contacting you that fetishize trans bodies. Mm. And so part of that fetishization is the activation of trans women's penises. And so with that, some trans women sacrifice not being on hormones so that downstairs can work for survival sex work to pay off their breast augmentation or face or whatever.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. So with hormone therapy, is the ideal state for a trans woman to be on the hormones, is that just like consistently taking them for the rest of your life? Mm-hmm. You never stop taking them. You don't reach a point where you're like, okay, I've taken the hormones now and now.
So when you don't have testosterone in your system, you need something. And so that's where the estrogen comes in. Testosterone blockers is a thing until you get rid of your testicles or you get sexual reassignment surgery down there. Then you don't need to take blockers anymore.
Okay.
Because you've got rid of.
Got it.
The man in the mirror.
Yeah.
And so there's so much conversations around these things. But again, like, not every trans woman needs to be on hormone therapy. Not every trans woman wants to look femme. Mm-hmm. And I really want to acknowledge that. Mm-hmm. And you don't need to appeal to society's beauty standards in order for you to feel complete as a woman. But I understand that it is a survival tool to be desired, to be somewhat beautiful. Beautiful people have a lot of privilege.
Yeah.
And then possibility, not being able to be kind of clocked as trans, gives you a lot of stability and survival in life. Growing up, you hear people say, like, education is really important. Everyone be educated. But for a trans person, it's different. You can be educated and not possible and still get beat up on the streets or still not be offered a job because of the way you look. And so, like, you can be educated. And so sometimes, like, the word on the street for some girls is, like, you have to look after yourself as well in terms of your appearance, because the reality of this world isn't kind. Even to regular people, like, looks is a big deal. So transition for me is a tool of survival.
Wow.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do it. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Wow, okay. So you mentioned you're starting a GoFundMe page for your gender-affirming surgery that mm-hmm. you're planning to have soon. Can you talk to me a little bit about that?
Yeah, girls. So I have been read to filth by my girls. And so I am very hesitant about asking for help. Mm-hmm. That's just not my character, especially to strangers. Maybe my character to my girls. But... been in conversation with many girls that have done their GoFundMe, and they have been joining me like, what are you waiting for? You have put in so much work and this and that, and in my head it's like, it's not even about putting in the work. Like, I feel like I wouldn't want my GoFundMe to look like an IOU service. And so my main reason for like being really hesitant about it is like coming from a lived experience, and also many lived experiences around me where like money doesn't grow on trees. And there's different types of survivals, and then in terms of being an artist, artists are looking for money. Like, and then thinking about living in New Zealand, everyone is trying to find a house.
Yeah.
And so I got really, really hesitant to ask for money, especially like just after a pandemic. And so, like, I've been contemplating it for 2 years. But what really got me was one of my girls was sitting next to me in Sydney, and we were in my little hotel suite. And she was saying, like, girl, I messaged you about, you know, advice about launching my GoFundMe last year in November. And I was like, yeah. And they go, and then you said that you're going to do yours for Pride Festival. And it's like, yeah. And she goes, and who's sitting here with boobs and who's sitting here with no boobs? And I was like, yeah, girl, I'll get onto it.
It's on the to-do list.
Yeah. And then my other best friend, so like I went to Sydney, and then I went to Brisbane, and one of the girls in Brisbane said, like, Sissy, like, we deserve this. And, you know, like, I've just did mine and I thought I'd never get support. And then all these like loved ones and like fans or whatever, or even people I don't even know are supporting me, and it's their choice. And so, like, girl, I'm like halfway there. Oh. And I was like, okay, good to know. And then go to Melbourne, and the girls in Melbourne, like, girl, you literally just do the post. And it's literally, you're not telling people to do it. It's like they want to do it if they want to. So, like, don't feel too hesitant about it. And then I was like, okay, then. And so I am releasing a GoFundMe.
Amazing.
And then I thought about, so usually the girls ask for like one thing or two things. They won't say like, hey, help me head to toe.
Yeah.
It's like, help me at one point and then I'll do the rest. Mm-hmm. Just a little favor. And so my girls and I have sat down, or one of my daughters and I have sat down, and we really thought about it. And I thought I'd ask the most difficult thing and the thing that I have the problem with the most, which is what we call FFS, which is facial feminization surgery. And so I'll be asking for that. And usually people would ask for like breast augmentation or downstairs. But I've decided to ask for my facial feminization surgery, just because I feel like when I am doing my activism and pulling up for my community and standing in front of people and like, yeah, just going around, I always have an overwhelming anxiety before I go. And then as soon as I stand in front of people, I turn it off and like, okay, bigger than you, get over it. And at least you're doing it for a good cause.
Yeah.
But I would love to do it with a good cause and a less heavy weight on my shoulders. I'd love to feel like myself. I'd like to feel at peace when I stand in front of people and stand in front of cameras doing the work for my community.
Mm-hmm.
And then also just for me, I have this like, we femme queens in ballroom, which are trans women, we always talk about fantasy. It's for the fantasy. It's just my fantasy.
And,
and then it gets to a point where I listen to the word and I'm like, this needs to be our reality. And we need to stop dreaming and be on the receiving end of our realities that we deserve.
Fucking A. Yes to this. Yes to this. And I think just like generally in society, there's like, there's not enough celebration around people, you know, getting support and asking for help. And I think it's so important. I think it's so courageous. And yeah, I just think it's amazing, incredible. And yeah.
And that's the most expensive, like it's one of the most trickiest ones to get tick off the list. Like girls sometimes like would probably get to a certain age, like, okay, it's never happening. I'm biffing that goal.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of why I wanted to ask for that one. Because it's the most almost unrealistic one to achieve.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. All right. So what does it look like? What does that surgery look like exactly?
So it depends on the girl. Mm-hmm. So everyone like has a certain type of aesthetic or what we would say like fantasy for their dream presenting, you know, how they want to present.
Yeah.
And so for me, it's just more like working with what I got. And, like, I still love the flavor, but it's funny because I want to talk in slang, but I want everyone to get it. So, like, in slang, I want to look cunt, I want to look pussy. But in a wider audience, you know, phrasing, I would say, like, my version of a just a stunning, undeniable goddess. So in my head, I would love to be able to, like, walk around and deny men.
Yes. Yeah. Yes to that. Oh.
Trust me, I can still get it with whatever I look like now, but I know that it's power.
Yeah.
Feeling 100% in your skin is unapologetic power that you release into this world. And I want to get as much power as I can.
Okay, well, we're going to go on a bit of a sidetrack journey to more like your schooling years, I guess. So what were the conversations amongst your friends and like people at school and I guess like, yeah, around sex and pleasure growing up?
It's really interesting. Like, I can't speak for every, like, queer person, but, like, in queer communities, sex conversations is hella normal.
Yeah.
Like, it's so, like, what are you wearing today? But we're like, he's so cute. I would so suck his dick. Like, it's so normal conversations. And I quickly realized, like, as I get older and, like, talking to wide ranges of, like, different communities and groups and people, that my mouth is dirty. And I'm like, it's not dirty. It's sexually liberated. But I am someone that identifies as someone that's sexually liberated. And I can kind of talk about sex a bit too much because I just really love it. But in high school, it was very normal, especially when you go to an all-boys Catholic school and everyone's going through puberty, including the girls. And so, like, it's very much trick-or-treat, you know. The meat is around. And, you know, boys, majority of them is easy. When you're young and horny boots, like, you know, and then you have girls in the same school and we're the only girls.
Yes.
Like, flirting is normal. Discreet hookups is normal. And just being, like, super sexualized in school was, like, a thing because we were the only girls. So, like, at an all-boys Catholic school, you would see even, like, female teachers be, like, sexually uncomfortable. Like, the boys would be rude to the teachers or behind their backs. It's just, like, ransom hormones going around, you know?
Yeah.
And so, like, when you have a bunch of queer girls in all-boys Catholic school, it's like, and then while boys are going through puberty, it's almost, like, inevitable that the girls would meet with these boys. Yeah, I had my first boyfriend in high school.
Wow.
It was like, I would say, a beautiful nightmare.
In what way?
Just being an openly trans girl going out with a straight boy that is handsome, mm-hmm. At an all-boys Catholic school. You can imagine the type of bullying. Mm. But also, what was beautiful about it that I can take away was what it ignited in terms of conversations between parents and conversations with teachers, students' conversations. And then because it was like a viral thing, because it was like one of the first of its kind in Auckland, lots of schools knew as well. Mm. And then it like did like a triple effect, domino effect, in the sense of like other trans girls started dating guys too. Like people started being more curious. Mm. But we still got a long way to go. Like it's not as normal as we'd hoped. But it is closer than when I was in school in 2011 down.
Mm.
Yeah.
And did you have to wear school uniform? And
yeah.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we lifted the shorts.
Yeah.
Stacey Antonio, who is also Stacey's work makeup artist, based in South Auckland, she was a girl, a trans girl in my form. Her mom was a seamstress. So we would go to her and she would sew our uniform tight. So our shirts were tight, our mini shorts were either folded or she would intentionally fold them and like sew it. And we would get in trouble for our uniform. Once we got like new hair to faculty, they were like, no makeup, tie up your hair, cut your hair. They try to shut us down, but you can never shut us down.
And this, I don't know if this is a appropriate question or not, but I'm just going to ask it. What do you feel like? You wanted to go to a girls' school, or were you really comfortable at the boys' school?
I, at the early stages in primary, I knew that I was like, you know, flamboyant, I was different. But I more just wanted to follow my friends.
Yeah.
And majority of them were girls, but they were going to like co-ed schools. And so when I went to an all-boys Catholic school, I went to intermediate and then it transitioned into college at the same school. So usually, like, my siblings before me, they would all go to the co-ed schools or whatever and then separate into, like, Auckland Girls Grammar and De La Salle. But when my brother was the first one to go to De La Salle, my mum found out that it was an intermediate as well. So once I finished primary, my mum was like, you're going to go there because it's easier and, like, you know, all these things. And so I was the only one from my primary school that went to that school. So I was already kind of feeling isolated by myself.
Mm.
And so the idea that I had at that time was I want to go to school with my friends.
Yeah.
But I quickly learned like halfway throughout the school and when I transitioned that my mom secretly put me in that school to be with the other queens. Because I had a cousin that is trans who went to the school and was like a fierce queen.
Amazing.
And so my mom kind of had a little bit of a hope that I would connect to my group. And she did the right thing.
Wow.
Yeah.
And have your parents been really supportive?
Yeah. So I would say that when you're a teenager, you don't really realize how supportive they are. And so I had a lot of resentment because even though they were supporting me, they weren't supporting me the way I envisioned, which is like, I want to be a girl, buy me girls' clothes, this, Barbie dolls, that, like, just be full fab straight away.
Yeah.
Don't cut my hair. But I think they were supporting me in a sense of, like, to their knowledge of the world and how they would receive me. So, like, they would kind of, like, micromanage my identity without really telling me to stop being who I am. And I had a problem with that, but that was not me realizing the micromanaging about how I appear and things was for my safety.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah. And so I quickly realized that, but I also, when I transitioned and got a bit older, I learned that, like, when you transition, your family transitions with you. And I found out that my dad would get teased at his job because I am who I am. And then in growing up, and so it was beautiful to go to his job as full pretty girl And then they were like, who's that girl? And, you know, the boys at his job were like, that's my daughter. And so it went from teasing to now flexing. And then they would go to him and be like, we saw your daughter on the newspaper or on TV.
Yes.
So it's like it's a nice switch up. And I'm glad that I could do that for him.
Amazing. Oh, that's so beautiful. And how did you navigate intimacy and relationships at school or growing up?
Poorly.
Didn't we all?
Yeah, girl. It was a lot of validate me instead of self-validation. I think a lot of us brought up in a way where, like, the format is, you know, you grow up, go to kindergarten, go to school, work, married, done.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had this idea when I was young that to have a partner, specifically a man, was like the ultimate female fantasy, like womanhood. Mm. And I feel like the comfort of a man made me feel like a woman and validated that.
Mm.
And then I also realized, like, in high school, it's better to be desired than bashed. And so a lot of my growing up was to please the male gaze, or else I'm going to get a hiding, you know, or else I'm going to be beat up. And as much as I tried my best to please the male gaze, I couldn't help but still be flamboyant, a theater major, a dancer. And so, like, I noticed that when you are trying to appeal to these men, they also don't want you to have a voice.
Mm.
And being so extroverted and loud and flamboyant and femme, and that just didn't resonate to me. So, like, as much as I try to be appealing, I still was annoying. I learned in my growing up in high school, intimacy was difficult because it was more to cater to the intimacy of men and their desires and the male gaze.
Mm.
Then I took that with me into studying. And then I had, in my adult life, I had dated a guy from overseas. And it went totally south. Like, it was, when I got to Australia, it was actually horrible. And then I finally asked my parents for advice, and this is like the proper time I actually asked them for relationship advice as well. And then when I got home, my best friend, like, cried and said, like, you need to stop doing this. We just don't know what to do with you because, like, you constantly put yourself in certain positions for this, like, male validation, and we're so worried about you, but you keep, you know. Then I really thought about it, and I'm like, my family and friends been loving up on me, and here's all my time and effort, and my mental space is literally catering to men and for that validation. And so I made the switch, and I said to myself that if you don't love me and respect me, you don't deserve that type of love for me or that type of energy. And so until I get a partner, I will invest into those that give me that energy. So I started investing in my friends and family, and now I'm investing in my chosen family. And then where I am today is invest in yourself now.
Yes! Fuck yes. Oh.
So lots of life lessons.
Wow. How are you feeling about sex and pleasure in the stage of your life now?
It's getting too much. I am very sexually liberated.
It's getting too much. Get into that.
I mean, why, you know, get yourself off when someone else can do it?
Absolutely.
I'm super sexually liberated in the sense of reclaiming my body and my pleasure. And wherever that looks like on my body, I should be able to activate it.
Mm.
So I'm always kind of like trying to develop nuances of pleasure in my body. And so for a long period of time, like growing up, like no one would touch downstairs for a lot of the girls because we felt like such a dysphoria with our bodies, and because we're told if that is a man downstairs, when trans women can identify as women regardless of what they look like or what their body is. And so I decided to think of like this idea of reclamation and reclaiming my body. and reclaiming my body looks like enjoying its natural pleasures.
Mm.
And so in my journey of sexual liberation and having sovereignty over myself and autonomy, I literally have been in a place where, like, I'm getting mine. It's yes. my turn.
Yes, it is.
And it's so interesting because, like, that's why I kind of now identify as pansexual, because, straight men are boring. Like, their ideas of sex is not wide range. Like, queer people for me are so broad in terms of exploring pleasure and what that looks like and offering. Well, queer people that know who they are. Yes. Because we do know the queer D-Lows. It's like, give me a blow and go. And I'm like, sweetie. But, yeah, and so I'm all about, like, yeah, like, getting mine and having my turn. Mm. And because I have been exploring that unapologetically, and now, I see sex as beautiful, but not so, like, untouchable. Mm. Like, I think so many people have this idea, like, my body is my temple. I don't give it to anyone. And I was like, okay, cool, that's cool.
Mm.
But it's also beautiful to offer yourself and enjoy pleasure. Like, there's other ways. And it's okay to appreciate different people and their styles of how they preserve their bodies or how they share their bodies.
Totally.
And so my thing is, like, I'm always on the hunt for pleasure. And I'm a flirt. So good luck if you want a monogamous relationship with me. But I do say, like, I'll be monogamous for 1 year or two, and then we're opening it up. I reflect it back to who I am. So when I say, like, earlier that I'm in love with who I am, just not how I am. So what I mean by who I am is pre-colonization, it was very fluid. And Fafa Fingers, who can also identify as trans women, gay men, and non-binary people in a modern day world, were seen as, like, goddesses, and everyone wanted to fuck them. Mm. And so in my mind, reflecting about that in modern day context, for me, so many brown poly men are D-Lo for, like, queer people in general.
Mm.
But that is our history, that this is normal. And so I feel like for me, this discreet behavior and D-Lo behavior is you denying who you are and what you feel natural to engage with. And then there you're at a loss because you can't have a full experience because of what society has taught you and what westernized cultures has taught you.
Mm.
And so for me, I have unpacked that, and I have been walking around like a goddess that deserves all the, you know, booty calls I deserve. But I will admit that part of my sexual liberation has also come with the idea that no one can handle me in a relationship. Mm. So everyone, like, small talk, sex, that's all you're worth. Because for me, I feel like that's all we can evolve to.
Mm.
I look at myself in my life and be like, you could never handle me in a relationship.
Mm.
But you can handle me in bed, like, you know.
Yes.
And so I look at my worth and how I am and who I am. And I'm just like, no one in Auckland can. Like, yeah. I would probably not be in a relationship, but, like, in terms of people that I've crossed paths with, like, I have no hope. And so in my head, I'm like, he's probably in New York, or she's probably in New York, or they are probably in New York.
Yes.
But yeah, I do have a fantasy of dating a fine black trans man in America. Girl.
Yes to that.
Yeah.
Yes. So do you have plans to move overseas, or what's the vibe there?
So I do feel like it's really important to get out of the nest. If you live in New Zealand and Australia, there needs to be a certain point where you leave the nest to not only flourish and explore and expand, but also get out before we destroy each other. I think the NZ, or more so NZ, is so small that it's kind of like trapping so much personalities in one room. And I feel like this country, we could literally ruin ourselves. Like, we could destroy each other. Mm-hmm. It's like tall poppy syndrome. And even like developing, like, let's say I did a theater show and then I developed it and then like tell everyone to come watch it again. It's just a different, like an elevated version. And then I'll do it one more time. And they're like, okay, girl, you're doing the same show.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
in bigger countries, you can travel that show in one city and not everyone has seen it. And so I feel like we're getting sick of like creating a new show every year or every 2 years because we've already seen it and we feel a bit hesitant to keep going with the one work.
Mm.
And so for your sanity, do the one work and take it around the world for like a year or two and then make a new one in New Zealand and then go do the same thing.
Yeah, beautiful.
And I just feel like I've been an artist here since 2011 and I'm looking at my vocabulary of work and I'm like, I've created so much just because we've already seen it.
Yeah.
In this country.
Mm.
And so I'm like, I could probably take one of my works from like 4 years ago to Australia and do it there. And they would be like, oh my gosh.
Yes.
But in New Zealand, we're like, oh, another story, please.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
We've seen that story.
Have you got like friends and community over in Australia that you could go and like stay with? And
yeah, I do. Beautiful Boreham community there.
Yeah.
And I have a House of Iman chapter over there as well.
Cool.
And so I've been having, like strengthening my relationships there. And it's super beautiful. And so I do intend moving there, I would say, for a bit for now.
Yeah.
I never say, like, move there forever or whatever because you never know what happens.
No.
And so I like to kind of go with the spontaneity of where it would take me.
Mm.
But also not holding myself from coming home.
Mm.
And like, and making people feel like if you come home too early, you failed. Like,
yeah.
That's not even a thing, girl.
No, it's not a thing.
I'm coming home. Like, and what?
Yes.
Oh my God. It's like, okay.
People make it a thing, don't like, they? Like, get over
a,
it.
Such a
I'm
big
home.
Deal. And I'm like, okay, so it didn't go well. And what?
Yes.
So in my head, like, I am planning to make the little shift over.
Yeah.
But I probably will be back and forth because I got big projects here next year as well.
Cool.
But there's something I talked to Zeki. He told me, like, when I was contemplating about moving, he was saying, there's something about being an artist in New Zealand that puts you on compared to the rest of the world. Like, when you think about, because he's a DJ and works in parties and stuff like that.
Mm.
And so he was just like, and he DJed our LSS party, which is a Boreham party House of Iman hosted. And he was like, look at this party. Heaps of people doing that in Australia. Only a few people are doing it in New Zealand. Mm. You stand out. And so, like, there's something beautiful about New Zealand. And then, obviously, like, Lance Savali.
Yes.
He's like the Chris Brown of New Zealand.
Yes.
And so, like, he'd probably stay here because he'd be, you know, more centered, gets more money here and then go back and forth.
Yeah,
but for some reason,
true.
You can see that he always comes back home.
Mm.
And so there's something about home here that really elevates individuals. Mm. And you can see that everyone is always looking in New Zealand, like even through like the lens of like Periscope and
yeah.
And even like in our own contemporary artists and just even our land, people want to come film their movies here.
Yeah.
And so there's something great about New Zealand that I always want to acknowledge. Mm. I mean, Aotearoa. Mm. And so I would never not want to hesitate coming back.
Mm. Beautiful.
Yeah.
Amazing. And so with all the wisdom that you have now based on all of your incredible life experience, what would you tell your younger self?
Chill out, girl. No. I would say, what would I say, girl? Choose you. Really figure out what love looks like and then chase that. And then I would say to my younger self, are we transitioning? What is it? Is it giving trans? Is it giving femme queen? Or are we transitioning? Okay, cool. What is it looking like? And then talk about the fantasy and then was like, okay, what are we going to take to get there?
Mm.
And then I would probably say, like, get your license. Honestly, get it before you leave school, girl. And, like, find a job. Dearie, find a job. Preferably one that isn't at the mall, because you want to build up into like something higher and higher and higher. And then stretch. Flexibility is key, girl. You want to be a dancer, girl, stretch. And then last one, read a book.
Nice. Girl, nice.
Read a book. It's 5 books a day, girl. Something. Read a damn book.
5 books a day is extreme.
A week or something. Start small. Make your way to novels.
Baby steps. Amazing.
Girl.
Yes, to all of those. I love them. And final question. Most important question. What is your favorite finger food?
My favorite finger food. Why do I go straight to sex with that?
No, you can go in any direction as
well.
My
favorite finger food. You know, it's so funny because that's so not an Islander thing. We don't do finger food.
Mm.
We do palm food.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful. Beautiful.
Okay, favorite finger food. I love a watermelon.
Beautiful.
I love fruit. I think a good finger food is fruit. And then I am a very, very much a sweet tooth.
What is it? What's your favorite?
Gummies and chocolate.
Oh, yes to that. Yeah. Yes to that. Yeah, what chocolate?
Oh, you can't tell me. Ask me that question because it's too hard. We're okay, wait. Okay. Okay, who's top dog? Top dog. Okay, I would go with the modern day flake. Ooh. With the coverage so it doesn't flake around, because that's what always pisses me off. I need to eat it all.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll do flake. I'll give it to the flakes.
It's done. Gorgeous. Flakes is
for the pussy girls. Flakes is kind.
Okay, yes. Thank you so much, Stacey. Thank you for having me. It was such an honor to have you here, and I've learned so much, and you're amazing. And thank you for your vulnerability and sharing and openness and courage and just all of you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for dining with Finger Food. If you liked this conversation, you can tip your maitre d' by subscribing, leaving a review, and sharing this podcast with your friends. If you want to find more of my podcasts, go to stacyogorman.com. Stay safe, stay sexy. See you soon.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.